Clorox Confessional, Episode 1, Trivial Things. I've always been a reader. Albeit a slow one, I find profound pleasure in the practice. My ability to immerse myself in the story has usually allowed me to find a certain freedom. In my opinion, that is inherently what separates a reader from one who identifies as not. Immersion. If you can't go where the book wants to take you, then reading it becomes work. And what's the point of that? Granted, what you read has to be a suitable guide for you personally, but there's plenty out there. The thing is, the library in this place leaves something to be desired. But there are some good tomes to be found if you're easily led. Some old college Norton anthologies with the Bible thin paper, complete works of Flannery O'Connor, great poets of the 20th century, whatever else has been donated. Going through one of those bricks, I found a story called The Bet by Chekhov. I'm not going to delve into the themes, just the meat of it. A banker and a lawyer are having a debate at some ritzy Russian dinner party in the 19th century, you know, like they did, about capital punishment. Banker says it's a kindness to put a man out of his misery rather than imprison him his whole life. Lawyer begs to differ and says no man should have a say over another's mortality. Says to live in any form is better than not. So the two make a bet. Bear in mind, it's a completely unrealistic bet, but it serves the purpose of the story. Banker says the lawyer's full of it, and he wouldn't make it in his cell 5 years. Lawyer says, I'll do you one better and stay in there 15. Sold, says the banker in front of numerous witnesses, and the lawyer is put in a guest room at the banker's house with no contact with the outside world. Now, the lawyer goes through motions he didn't realize he would. Starts out wanting wine, listening to music, and reading trash, but this soon becomes as flavorless as the walls around him. After a time, he begins reading philosophy and religious texts, learning languages, studying science, everything that takes his brain further and further away from a limited understanding. By the time the terms of the bet are almost met, he has nearly transcended his physical form. Changed to a point that he forfeits and leaves just before the 15-year sentence is up. In a letter, the lawyer gives what I consider an epic speech to the banker about how he has learned enough to understand that nothing means anything in isolation, and that people who cling to material things have got the wrong idea about the fulfillment of life. We'll skip the religious comparisons of the Siddhartha, Christ-like figure of the lawyer and the secular, decadent character of the banker. I personally feel like the lawyer gets smart enough to know that A. One should never make 15-year bets when you're not old enough to know better than to go around your elbow to get to your asshole, and B. In the end, it's all shit anyway. Now, I haven't reached that epiphany myself, the second one, but I have at least realized that passing the time alone makes things far more difficult, but I suppose everything's subjective to a point. The reason I bring up that particular story isn't because I'm sitting in a cell myself, contemplating which one of those guys really was right. No, it inspired me to finally sit down and do something I'd never had the nerve to do before. And it's important to do those things. Find out what you're good at, or at least what you enjoy doing to pass the time. You could spend your whole life never realizing your gifts if you don't experiment with different things. You'll know what it is you want to do because it's been gnawing at you ever since you played with the idea of doing it in the first place. If you don't want to admit it to yourself, just sit down and think about it for a while. See, that's what this place does for you. It affords you the opportunity to stop lying to yourself. Life's not a winding path so much as a river that constantly branches off. And you find yourself more times than not just going with the current. That's how you end up getting married more than once, or sitting in a church you don't really agree with, voting for somebody who's actually a fool, or working a job you can't stand. And here, the current slows down enough that you can actually stand up in the water and take a look around. I make it sound easier than it really is. It's hard to break away from what is ingrained. It's not as easy as listing what you don't like. Naming those is considerably easier than explaining what you take pleasure in. I hate onions. Not only the taste, but the texture, the smell, the nauseating crunching sound it makes in the inner ear when it gets crushed between the molars. The weird sulfuric taste that attacks your tongue, throat, and nose. It's quite easy to describe. A person can do it without putting much thought into it. It's even simple to list those lesser annoyances. The feel of dry paper that won't turn under the fingertip, forcing you to lick it. The sound of someone repeatedly popping gum in their teeth. It's an easy list to make, but if I had to list something I love as much as I hate onions, I'd have to give it some consideration. A graham cracker dunked in milk would probably go right to the top. A root beer float. Something like that. The thing is, there's a whole lot of things to try in order to discover if they're pleasure or pain. The same goes for hobbies and activities, or what you do for a living. I've worked with my hands my whole life. I worked in one machine shop or another for 22 years. I know my way around a lathe. Hell, I can weld anything you can think of with my eyes shut. I didn't love it, but I was good at it, and it gave me the life I had. I worked metal. Of course, the only metal I touch now is bolted down to concrete, and it's not pretty. There's nothing aesthetic about it. Flat metal with edges and corners painted over and over countless times a lifeless gray, like it's trying to mimic the concrete, blend in, pure function. So much more can be done with metal. Anyway, things you love and things you hate. Didn't love metal work, but I didn't hate it. Like I said, I was good at it. Hated cutting okra in my grandma's garden. I don't know why I think of that now. And of course, I never let her know, but damn, I hated it. Itching ass okra with no shade in sight. Loved having sex with women. One in particular more than any other, but I'm not about to sit here and go down that road, so we'll just leave it. No, I'll get to the point and talk about something else that I'm more than fond of. Too bad I had to end up where I am to discover it, but I guess silver lining and all that. Yep, I had to get in here to discover how much I love to make shit up, or even just write down what I hear. The callus on my big finger where the pen rests is harder than anything raw aluminum ever put on my hands, and I absolutely love it. It defines me now, the pen. If only I could keep from dropping it, I'd get a lot more accomplished. I'm like a mechanic who spends most of his time looking for the tool he just had in his hand. I wouldn't rather have anything else, though. I mean, I can't imagine what it would be like to have a typewriter. It's not like I could keep up with it any better. I bet I could lose an Olivetti in this 14x8 cell just as easy as a pen. Nah, I wouldn't want it. Sure, I could get the words out a hell of a lot faster, but it wouldn't seem like it was flowing from me. They say out of abundance of the heart, the mouth may speak, but I believe out of abundance of the mind, the hand must write. I just need a pen to make that happen. Now, I could open my locker and get another one, worry about this one later, but that's a bad habit to get into. That's how you really start losing things in a place they shouldn't be able to get lost. Your brains don't leak out of your ears. That pen didn't fall out of this damn room. So I get down once again on my hands and knees, feeling around underneath the iron plate of the bottom bunk like a junkie who's dropped his fix. And there it is behind the stainless steel toilet, the black top and clear cylinder half full of ink. I reach behind and pluck it up with two fingers, then rise, careful not to bang my head on the bed frame again. Once I dust off my uniform, I sit myself down on my iron stool that connects to the iron desk bolted to the wall. Thumb the top off and place it on the opposite end. Smooth the wide rule notebook paper a few times and let my heart rate settle. Then I just let the tip go where it's of a mind to. There are few facilities cleaner than a prison. The spread of bleach is a sacrament. That of ammonia, its own ritual. Just don't cross the two. Floors lined so thick with wax, certain places must be avoided at particular times of the day, lest the reflection blind you. Concrete, mortar, concrete. Nothing natural to welcome the scurry of insect or rodent, which at times may be welcome. There is only the sealed room with its echoing, the incessant, surreal echoing. If it's not concrete, it's metal. Everything metal, cold and hard. Murder on shins, on knuckles, on heads, so opposite the flesh. Metal bed frame fused to the concrete with metal bolts. Metal toilet and sink combination, metal mirror. metal desk with a locker at the end, another combination. Metal chair at said table where one can write, where I write now. Lean back, my head hits the metal bed frame. Try to stretch and my hand hits the concrete wall underneath the window. The window is transparent, but it's not glass, not really. And no more than 6 inches in height, maybe 30 long. Unbreakable, some sort of reinforced plexiglass with a shatterproof film in the middle, surrounded by walls painted gray and white so often the smell never really leaves. A gray metal flap lines the wall beneath the window. Open it and the air gets sucked out through the grate like a vacuum, especially if the dorm door is open. It's clean though. By Christ, it's clean all the way through. There's no air conditioning, so the building relies on the constant draft that's controlled in the room by the window. It's much easier to call it a room than what it is. Leave it and you're in the day room. High ceilings, sealed walls, industrial fans. Air enters through one place, the only door that leads out of the dorm. Suction's so strong at the metal door it'll take a finger clean off. I've seen it do it. The windows suck air through, so every conceivable smell passes, and that smell is laced with bleach or ammonia or paint, ever so slightly. Whether it's cheap tobacco in a roll-up cigarette, shoe polish on a state-issued boot, or ramen noodles soaking slowly in the lukewarm water from the hot water spigot, it's on the breeze. Every now and then, the twinge of perfume from the neck of a female officer might drift in, but it's cheap, and it only rides the same wave as the cigarette smoke and the flatulence. Hi, how's it going? His voice invades my thoughts and makes me run a little line after the E of the last word. Slower every time you ask. Ah, hold on. I'll be back. How well I know. DuBose leaves my cell door with a marching step, and I can only shake my head at his goofy self. Well, I best get back to it because I know good and damn well he will be back. The smell gets to the point you'd have to think about it to know what's smelling. You have to concentrate on it. Otherwise, it's just how the world smells. About a 20-acre world. 1,100 damn souls drifting around like pond water. Barely enough to keep from scumming. Could be that they're already scum. Therein lies the separate struggle. Once your brain succumbs to the bleach, the paint, the concrete, the smells, once it realizes it's a fight not to be fought lest sanity take a dive, once you become acclimated, there are the others. The reasons for the chain link and razor wire, the ammonia and the bleach. And each one carries their own story. Some right on their sleeve and others deep inside, but more often than not, it finds its way out, the story, like a thorn buried in flesh. It's the story that creeps around the interior of the skull, bound by its limitations, not unlike the man inside this prison. And it begs to be let out, whether the person comes to terms with it or not. The trick is, there is something even more pleasing than letting the story out. It's having it read back to them in a different voice. And it's the latter that brings them to me. But they usually don't come running. For the most part, people are idle in here. It almost seems like it's back in time, back in the olden days, the way you pay attention to everything and each other. Life's so slow now, you can read what you want, learn to do other things, maybe write, but not play the guitar because of the strings. Can't have them in here. You get a single blade razor once a week to shave with, but you can't have a guitar string unless you choke somebody or make a tattoo needle. Well, got sidetracked by the guitar. It's a sensitive subject. Anyway, time is slower here. You pay attention to things ordinarily ignored. The shadows get a lot of attention, their behavior. Outside the front window of the day room, there's a light pole casts a nice shadow to remind you you're on the east side or the west side. That's the two hemispheres of this acred world, with the work unit being separated a little ways off down the hill like the moon or just some other satellite called the split. I currently live in the country of I-Building on the soft-assed east side, which is a hell of a lot better than being on the hard-assed west in some ways, but not others. That shadow of the light pole grows and shrinks like all shadows do, changing only slightly, just so it can be noticed perhaps weakly, the changes. After enough time, the exact location of the shadow can be foretold down to the separation of the sparse grass in the yard and the concrete sidewalk. making the onlooker some kind of prophet, a stagnant, floating scum soothsayer of the dual-hemisphered world covered in roll-up cigarettes, ramen noodles, big pen tattoos, and bleach. All right, I'm back. Oh, thank God. I might as well put the pen down. He's getting comfortable on the bed, so he ain't going nowhere. What'd you do, go chief one? Nah, went and snuck me a little shakedown. He holds up a state-made tattoo gun, a filed-down paperclip inserted into the clear housing of a pen, the motor of a cassette player taped to the side. Got it off Cheesy. Why the hell you come in here with it? You want them to think I'm a snitch? Aw, they know you're not. He slides the plain black baseball cap back on his head. The tan line stands out like dry sand from wet. Everybody in here knew he was doing it. Hell, I could hear it. Hey, he leans up behind me and puts his hand on the notebook. Is this new? Can I read it? Ain't hardly nothing to read. I'm just trying to improve my serious writing, the aesthetic. I try to find a way to explain it to him, but he just looks at me, the gears turning but missing some cogs. Well, go on and read it, I reckon. I watch his eyes go back and forth over the lines, rather slow movement. Then I decide to open the slat some, get some more breeze coming through. He smokes much nicer cigarettes than convicts, but I've become acclimated to the cheap tobacco. The Marlboro wafting off him is giving me a headache. Outside, the perimeter car makes its customary circle around the faded blacktop, neither coming nor going. Just round and round and round she goes. Where she stops, nobody knows. That thick-legged woman Royal's driving. I believe it is. It's hard to tell. That looks like her from here. She's a pretty gal. And that's why they keep her ass out there in that car in a tower. She causes too much commotion. The first traces of fall seem to be on the wind, but it's too faint to tell. Don't want to jinx it by saying it's here. Damn, it gets so hot in here. And now the time when my thoughts sets me off like I knew it would. I imagine my chair sitting right beside the window unit in my trailer. Beer on the table, remote in hand, baseball on the TV. Air so cold it'd make my left ear numb. I can still hear her old heavy step walk coming up the hall, heel first, like a damn bull walking, though she didn't weigh much or nothing. Come get in my lap half the time, rather than sit on the sofa, her knotty tailbone sticking in my thigh. Maybe it was because she loved me. Maybe it was the air. Hell, who cares? She sat there is all that matters. No. No. Stop, damn it. Don't go down that road. Not in here. It'll get you thinking again. Thinking about making it go away. Well, I need to get back at it, Dubosa. I need to get my mind on it. This ain't nothing like your usual stuff, Pop. His voice is somber and serious, an unusual tone for him. This is like the stuff they make you read in school. I told you it's an artistic attempt. It's more poetic. I take the notebook from him, place it back on the metal desk with a thump. I'm about to start something else, though. This isn't helping my thoughts. You want to talk about it? He means well. He's just young, which means he thinks he knows now what he'll find out later, after the epiphany that he doesn't know anything at all. No, Officer Dubose. I want you to do rounds, or call a smoke break, or something, for everybody in here thinks we're having a damn affair. Jesus, Pop! But he gets up and leaves my 14x8 Hilton just as quick as a scared rabbit. Well, she's weighing on me hard now. Best thing is to get at it, so I pick up the pen again. Besides the smell, the concrete, the metal, and the convicts, it's the routine that'll drive a man batty. He who gets out after years in this world will forever associate 8, 11, 2, 4, 7, 9, and 11 as count times. He may note the others in the early a.m. if he has a hard time sleeping. 8 a.m. is inspection, 7 p.m. is peel call. He probably stands Pavlovian still in a store or at the doctor's office years later at these times waiting to be pointed at and counted like a damn chicken egg in the yard. She cooked eggs for me every morning, 3 fried hard, Duke's mayonnaise and black pepper between 2 pieces of white bread every morning without fail, 2 strips of bacon on it if we had it. Well, I knew I'd started down this road. Hell, I wonder. I ain't never tried to let it bleed out on paper. Might as well see if I can let it flow out of my head through this pen like a hose. 1 tablespoon of sugar and whole milk in the coffee made the same way every time. Couldn't tell one cup from the next. I'd smell cooling in my clothes, no matter how much they got washed. Always a little black under my fingernails. Started missing little things like that when I got in here. The smell of the coolant, the feel of aluminum shavings. My hands have gotten downright soft in here. I bet she'd like it. I always used to complain about my hands, her bony country self. Can't you scrub with a stone or something? Can't you get a pumice stone? That's how she always said it every time. A pumice stone. I can't see her without blood in her hair now. Every single time I think about her, I see the blood just the way it was. Can't clean it any better from my mind as I could from her or the grease from under my fingernails. Hey, Pop. He knocks at the same time he says it. Just do one or the other. Never understood why anybody would do both. I drop my pen and close the notebook over it. Just forget it. What's up, Avery? You still got a lighter? He holds up a roll-up to prove he needs one. Nah, it ran out of fluid weeks ago. Well, can I use your socket? Mine's still messed up. It's messed up because you popping it too much, Avery. Why would I let you do it to mine? I didn't do it, Pop. That young buck did before they moved him to the west side. He didn't know what he was doing. Since I give no more refusal, he pulls the pencil lead from his pocket and tears off a piece of state-issued toilet paper beside the steel toilet. Wrapping the paper around the ends of the lead, he leans down and inserts them into the electrical outlet. There's a slight popping noise as the paper catches fire. The smell's strong, something different, a metallic smell. He lights the roll up and drops the burning paper in the toilet. I lean over and pull the window slot all the way open. Mind if I sit a spell? He asks as he sits on the toilet, keeping his legs apart so he can use it as an ashtray. Oh, you writing another detective story? Not this time. I'm just fooling about. Oh, I sure like that last one. I swear to end and come out of nowhere. He took a draw, keeping the cigarette cupped in his hand out of habit, making it easy to hide if DuBose looked in. You ever think you'd be so good at it? I promise it never crossed my mind working on a cutter. Avery just stares at the floor for a minute with a vacant expression, then he says to himself more than me, oh, I want a drink so bad I could cry. He looks out the window, his eyes sure enough looking glossy. Sal ain't got no hooch, I ask him. No, I mean a real drink. He stares back down at the floor going down his own road. Wild turkey and coke. Just a splash, enough to call it a mixed drink. Spending the whole time drinking it just trying to taste the Coca-Cola, but you can't. He stares now in silence, looking at the mirrored wax floor, a trail of white smoke cutting into his eyes, snaking to the ceiling, but he doesn't move. I finally break the silence before I start down my own road again. Well, you want to play some spades? Hell yes, he says, blinking away his thoughts. He pulls a state-issued sleeve across his eyes before dropping the speck of roll-up that is left in the toilet. His fingers are so yellow from the tar, you'd swear he was jaundiced. I flip the cards out one by one, and we settle them in our hands. He's leaned over with his forearms propped on his knees, one heel bouncing up and down like it's running on a battery. Never mind, he's old enough to be my daddy. He keeps placing and replacing his cards, unable to really focus on them. You got something you want to give me? I ask him, placing my own cards face down on my knee. How's that? You got anything you want me to write for you? I ask casually. It's usually one of the first things people ask me to do for them. You not working on anybody's right now? Nope, and it's sliding into my own, which is a place I'm not ready to go to yet. He mulls it over, still hammering that heel away, and furiously scratches the back of his head with the hand holding the cards. He lets out a deep breath through his nose and cuts his eyes up at me. Well, there's something I've had on my mind, kind of like a story, but I don't know how to tell it. His heel finally rests and he stops clenching his jaws. He seems to have calmed a little. Sometimes just occupying the mind is enough. God knows I need it. You tell me what it's about, and I'll write it out. I tell him flatly before reaching out my hand to take the cards back. Right now? Right goddamn now, I tell him and grab my pen, settle my glasses on the end of my nose. Well, okay, he replies. You mind if I keep smoking? Knock yourself out. I hear him pull out his bag, which would be the pale blue bugler bag with his pre-rolled cigarettes in them. Basically like clicking open your silver cigarette case in here, closing it and tapping the butt of your smoke on the lid before lighting it like they do in the movies. Without a word, I reach underneath my lockbox and pull out an old lighter that may have been made in the same factory as my pen, come to think of it. It's yellow and see-through, missing the metal piece that guards where the flame comes out, with just enough fluid for maybe a dozen more strikes. I thought you said you didn't have one. Well, I ain't in here for telling the truth. I chuckle and he lights his smoke, then hands the lighter back to me. Now go on and tell me what tail you got brewing, unless you need something else like a goddamn foot rub. All right. Avery replies and blows the smoke behind my head out the window. Well, it's about these two brothers having a conversation. A steady, unwavering breeze carried the songs of crickets through the window screen. It was an artificial breeze called in by the industrial fan mounted in Mama and Daddy's room facing out. It helped cool the house, although waking up soaking wet from the night's dew was not uncommon. It was nice at night, though, lying under the window, listening to the crickets, thinking about trivial things. You won't close it for a little bit? Damn crickets is driving me crazy tonight. You know I can't have it quiet in here. I always fall asleep for you. Just close it after I knock out. It ain't never really quiet in here, Billy. You can always hear the fan. Well, I'm just asking you to leave it open if you don't mind. I'd appreciate it. All right, man. Why aren't you asleep yet anyway? What you thinking about? Nothing. You ain't never thinking about nothing. Go on. Tell it. It ain't nothing worth talking about. You mean you just don't want to talk about it with me? Well, that's about right. I'll listen. Tell it. For some reason or another, it seemed the crickets quieted down a bit, as if to turn to near themselves. The hum of the fan did play in the background, but it was so constant, the only way it would have been noticed would be if it were to cease. Billy took a deep breath as if mulling it over, then he said what was on his mind. I guess I'm just a little confused, the boy began. About what? His brother asked. By going to hell? Raylan turned his head on the goose feather pillow toward his brother. By hell? What the hell are you confused about? He couldn't help but chuckle at his wit. Billy joined him so as not to make him mad. Well, I'm just saying. It doesn't make any sense. Well, it's fairly simple, Raylan said, ever so pleased to help his little brother understand something. You live right, you go to heaven. You live wrong, you go to hell. I don't think there is anything easier to understand. Well, there's that. Yeah, like, what is good and what is bad? Raylan giggled at what he perceived his brother's ignorance. Well, luckily there's a book with all the rules. It's like instructions for living. Billy seemed to hesitate. What he thought about was on the edge of being beyond words that he could use to explain. It was a frustrating feeling. He had known what his brother was going to tell him when he said what he was thinking about in the first place. He could have written a script for it, but he had no one else to talk to who would listen. Not really listen. He had tried to have this conversation with Reverend Tilly, but it had also gone as expected. He didn't listen. He waited for his turn to talk and explain to the little kid how wrong he was. But Billy couldn't help it. His problem was an issue of common sense, what he would later in life label as logic. Go on, Raylan said. I can tell you want to explain it, so just tell it. Well, Billy began, we all have a soul, right? That's right, Raylan replied. Well, let's just say that's true. Well, what do you mean, let's just say? Raylan said, it is true. Do you want me to tell it or not? You said you'd listen. All right, go on. Anyway, let's just say we all have a soul. Well, did that soul exist before my body was made? Is there like a pool full of souls where each one waits to get assigned to a body? Or is a soul created with the body? Is it new? It seems to me those are the only two ways it can possibly happen. You see what I'm saying? Either the soul already was and got assigned a body, or the soul was made the same way as the body. You see any other way? Why the hell can't you just wonder about why chickens shit and piss from the same hole? Because that's nothing to wonder about, Billy said. That's just how they are. That's most convenient for them. If it works for them, why mess with it? Could you imagine shit coming out of your pecker? Can you just listen to me? Billy hissed. All right, Raylan responded. Yes, I guess that's right. Either a soul was to begin with, or it was made for the body. What's your point? Okay, let's say that the soul already was. Let's say it was in a pool of other souls. Do you think it was in pain or suffering? Or do you think it was just floating around with other souls like a fish in a pond? I don't know what souls are doing before they're in the body. Raylan sounded exasperated. Me neither. But we can at least say they probably were not burning or in pain, right?
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. I mean, no, they wouldn't be in pain.
Right. So now, let's say this soul never was, and it was created with the body to make you who you are. Well then, it never felt pain or suffering.
He paused for a minute, and Raylan finally replied, Yes, I guess that sounds about right. Billy thought this over and shook his head.
Well, what's the point? Why would you or why would God take a soul that either was to begin with or was made for a new body and bring it into being for it to suffer? Wouldn't it be better to never be rather than suffer, with the possibility of hell?
Well, Raylan said, rubbing his eyes with the palms of his hands, as if his little brother often did this, often pulled at the soft tissue between his ears. If you live right, you won't go to hell. You get to go to heaven, where it's awesome and where it's wonderful every day. Billy said, and then they were quiet. Outside, the crickets carried on their own discussions, or perhaps they were debating the validity of the argument in the bedroom through the window. The fan kept on humming in Mama and Daddy's room, the curtains seeming to breathe in with the wind pulled in through the screen. The window showed as a silver square because the moon was so bright tonight, the sky so clear. All those stars, all those suns and planets and space in between. It made Billy's head hurt when he tried to contemplate it, but he did so love to contemplate it. Loved it dearly.
So your argument is then that the souls are getting a chance, Billy said with no question in his voice.
What you mean, Raylan asked, like a chance at heaven?
Right. You keep saying that if you live right, you go to heaven, and if you live wrong, you go to hell. Never mind that we never really establish what exactly is right and what isn't.
The Bible says, Raylan began, but Billy cut him off.
That's not an argument. You can't throw that up every time you want to block the argument. It's not magic, Ray. It's a book.
Silence was the only reply, so Billy continued.
Anyway, we said that a soul either always has been or it was made, and you're telling me it gets brought into existence or life or whatever for a shot at winning heaven. So let's just say that a person lives right. Okay, fine. He gets to go to heaven. Good for him. Now, let's say a soul doesn't live right, and he's got to go to hell. Hell is eternal burning in a lake of fire, is that right?
Well, Raylan groaned, I've heard that, and I've heard that it's being out of God's sight, which is terrible.
Okay, so either way sucks, Billy said flatly. That means that soul either got pulled from the pool and made for the body and gets to experience an eternity. That, by the way, is a period of time I can't even wrap my head around, and I don't think anyone can. Anyway, experience an eternity in agonizing pain. Wouldn't it be better just to never exist at all, or never leave the pool? I mean, he could have just stayed where he was, or have never been.
I don't believe that now that you say it, Raylan said.
Believe what?
That the soul never was. I don't think something has just never been.
Okay, Billy replied. Well, let me ask you something.
You remember before you were born? Actually, do you even remember being born? No, and you don't either. I don't claim to. That's all I'm saying. There was nothing before I was born, and then one day there was just something. I don't even remember the first something. I reckon if I sat and thought about it hard enough, I could get to the first one. But I was at least three. It may have been bouncing on the little toy horse with the springs, you remember? The one we got for Christmas.
Yeah, you was about three then, Raylan replied. But that doesn't mean you just wasn't anything before, you just don't remember.
It doesn't matter. The argument is still the same. You're saying souls come from a pool. Well, they already exist and get pulled to be in the body. That means there must be infinite souls, since I imagine reincarnation is off the table. Infinity is just like eternity. People spit it out a lot, but I don't believe they've ever really tried to comprehend it. It's easy to say a word, probably the easiest thing in the world.
You were saying about the argument, Raylan cut in with a sigh. Wrap it up now, my brain is jelly at this point, and I just want to go to sleep.
Well, Billy took a deep breath and listened to the crickets for a minute. He liked to think they were out there under those infinite stars and that bright white moon taking notes on the conversation. It was a fun thought, and he allowed himself silly candy like that.
Souls come from a pool, or a lottery, that's even better. They win a trip to the world so they can love and be loved.
Bow down and praise, feel hunger and thirst. Know the emptiness in their chest when someone dies. Grow old and feel pain along with the loss of what used to be. Make bad decisions freely or slip into them for lack of any good. Suffer the consequences.
Now, let me stop you there, Pop. Avery thumps his fourth cigarette into the toilet and stretches his arms out so hard that both elbows pop. Now, I'm not trying to tell you your business. I mean, I love what you done with the little bit I told you, but...
Yeah, that last paragraph's too much. I know. I say it while pinching the bridge of my nose.
That doesn't sound like a kid. I mean, he's smart as he needs to be in most places, but that last part... I'm not trying to criticize.
No, you're right. Don't apologize. I tell him while marking through the last paragraph. I lost my grip on the perspective. It's easy to do. You end up preaching when you get out of your character's head. My hand's starting to cramp up anyway, and it's about time to go eat. I tell you what, I'll fix the ending and get it to you. What do you think about that? Sometimes it helps if I step away a little bit and come back.
Well, hell, all right. It's not like I'm going anywhere.
Avery stands up and arches his back, it too popping like pine knots.
What do I owe you for telling it?
Nothing.
Nothing. Come on, Pop. That ain't hardly right.
It helped me out, Avery. Got my mind somewhere else. You don't owe me anything. If it'll make you feel square, you can give me back some clean paper to replace what I used.
Well, that's a hell of a deal.
He slaps me on the shoulder and steps out the door.
You come in the yard call later?
Yeah, I reckon I need to walk around a bit.
All right, I'll see you there.
These last words drift to me as he walks away. Once he's gone, I flush the toilet and lather my hands with state soap, which is pretty much pure lye. Rub my hands together, moving them over as many parts of the cell as I can to mask the cigarette smoke. I rinse my hands off and look in the stainless steel mirror so it can judge me for a few seconds. That's when I chuckle and plop back down on the little stool in front of my desk. My hand's a little wet, so it crinkles the paper where I lay it, but that's okay. Gives it character. I take up the line underneath the marked out final paragraph.
Well,
Billy spoke to the ceiling and to all who would listen. Just before the first word left his mouth, the call of a great horned owl came over the talk of the crickets and the whir of the fan through the mesh of the window screen.
Souls come from a pool, or a lottery. That's even better.
What's the point?
Sounds to me like being in that pool blissfully ignorant would be just as good as whatever heaven could be, and it sure as shit would be better than the alternative.
It doesn't make any sense, Ray.
Don't you get it? The soul didn't get any say in the matter.
If he ends up in hell, and according to the rules, that's a lot of damn souls,
he didn't even get any say in the matter.
I'm pretty sure he would have opted for floating in the stream." There was a long pause, and the two could hear each other breathing. They heard either Mama or Daddy get up to go to the bathroom, but nobody came in to check on them. They were too old to worry about all the time. Let's just talk about chicken shit," Raylan said and stuck his finger in Billy's ear. "That's fine," Billy replied. "That's about all your argument amounts to anyway."